Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Dogcast Radio. We've got a programme packed with dog features today, so let's get on. In today's programme, does the sound of this appeal to you?
You go in a tent, for example, you're very close to the dogs all night. If some animal, wild animal, should come around and they get disturbed while they're barking, and of course that sound goes right through the wall of the tent and you're right there.
What are these people actually doing with their dogs?
Those minesweeper dogs, as people are walking along the footpath, they go from side to side to side.
And is this some kind of new dog dance?
You put your back to the dog, hold the harness, and then you put a leg out in the water, and then the next person will hoop round that leg.
First of all, would you like to go on a holiday where you get to work with dogs and build a relationship with them? Well, Arlie Jorgensen can provide you with that opportunity, tailor-made to your requirements. Let's hear from him about some of the dog sledding holiday experiences he can provide.
We offer a wide range of experiences. Nearby, we have a Lutzen ski hill, and we offer short things like 1 and 2 hour rides for grandmas and grandpas and little kids and that. But then our specialty is much your own experience, where you come to run a team yourself, and we know 90% of our clients are first timers, so experience isn't necessary, and doesn't require athleticism, a tremendous amount anyway. It requires reasonable fitness, people with health issues, that shouldn't be too physically active should take a ride instead. But the dogs will do the work, and so we teach people how to do this. And of course, we go first, these small dog teams of 5 or 6 dogs. In children, we could go down to a 2 or a 3 dog team, just so that people can do it themselves and learn. The reality is that these dogs are the athletes, and they pull you. And so your job is to nurture that instinct and to create security and calm in the dog so that they can just go and do it. Because that's what they want to do, and they will do it as long as you do simple things like keep the line taut with the brake. You know, put yourself in the dog's place if you were pulling a load down a hill on snow and all of a sudden the line was loose and you couldn't feel the load behind you. You would naturally look back to see if it was going to run over you. And this is a common sense thing to do. And so we teach people right away to just use simple judgment and do what you can to make it safe and secure. Give them a sense that you can do your job. And I said, the dogs know their job better than you do, so don't worry too much about it. They're going to go, and they're going to follow us. And don't speak to them more than you have to, because they're not doing it to please you. They're doing it to please themselves. So it's not a trick. You don't have to give them a little treat. You just have to give them a sense of security. You know, basically, don't let them get out of control. Don't run it. Use the brake. I just say, this is it. Use the brake. It's a drag between your runners, and you just step on it physically, and it's a feel thing. As far as the driving of the sled, you know, you go around corners, and you have to dip your knees and get your center of gravity lower and maybe move a little bit with it and keep balance. But if a person should fall off, we just catch the team and allow them to catch up, and away we go again. But it's our primary purpose is to introduce this wonderful spirited animal to people and to give them an experience once again that we've kind of lost as a modern society, where you actually work with an animal, and that's where your reward together is. That's where their reward is too. They just love to do a good job, and these trips can last anywhere from a half a day to 7 days out. We go camping. We have tents with wood stoves, or we have cabin facilities, or we can even hook up with a very modern resort with the hot tubs and the fine dining and all that. We can do that too, But we like to encourage people to take the more rustic route because you stay more in tune with the dogs themselves. You try to get into their world. Let them take you into their world. And so we'll do that. We do a lot of 2- and 3-day trips. They're very common. 5-, 6-, 7-day trips are less common, but we do them. And everything is customized. We don't have trips all set that you fit into. You call us, and we will set up the trip that you want.
Does the trip include sort of, you know, you talked about sort of the relationship with the dog and interaction with the dog. Does it include sort of the caretaking of the dog as well?
It does. If you're interested, if that's what you want to do, and we encourage you to be so, because the person who feeds the dog is their friend for sure, you know, and it helps to integrate the whole experience, you know. I mean, a dog is an athlete. They're not going to be able to run and perform if they don't have a good night's rest. Sometimes we put straw on the ground so they can sleep comfortably. With a little bit of insulation from the snow. We have to make sure they're watered well in the morning, and that requires heating the water and baiting it, putting a little dog food in the water so that they will readily drink it. When they're standing on snow, they don't like to drink just cold, clear water very well. Occasionally you'll find that, but it's very rare. You have to kind of entice them to get enough fluids to stay hydrated. And so we teach people how to tell if they're becoming dehydrated, or we teach them what good weight is. We watch the stool as they run, because if there's stress involved, you can get some diarrhea, and that's not good. So you have to deal with all that to keep the dog feeling its best. And so if you're not involved with the caring of the dog, you know, it's a little bit more like vehicle. You just jump on and go. Well, it's more to it than that, and we like to share that, but it's not imperative. I mean, we will certainly do it if the people don't want to be involved in that part of it. But that's why if you go in a tent, for example, you're very close to the dogs all night. If some wild animal should come around and they get disturbed while they're barking, and of course that sound goes right through the wall of the tent, and you're right there to be aware of it, whereas if you're in an insulated cabin, it may be more silent and you may kind of sleep right through it, and maybe it'd be better if you didn't. We want this to be as much about the dogs as we can possibly make it, but there again, we respond to the people. I mean, if the family has a 9-year-old child, we probably aren't going to get that child up and outside in the middle of the night, or even expect them to do too much physical work with caring for the dogs. But of course, kids love to see dogs eat and drink as much as anybody, so we like everybody to be in on that if we can.
The dogs themselves, you know, you said they do it to please themselves. So does it take much training to get them to do the job they do, or is it, you know, very instinctive, or how does that work?
Dogs have been bred for thousands of years selectively to pull sleds, and so this instinct, it's an instinct, it's a drive inside them. When you take a young puppy and put them in the harness and give them an opportunity to pull something, it takes only a few steps before they discover how great their little body feels leaning into a harness, because they're built for it. Physically they're built for it, and mentally and emotionally they're built for it. They just love to doing it. And so training is, I don't really know how you teach them to do it. All you have to really do is make sure you don't create negativity in the first steps of it. You know, make sure your running is slow enough to where they're not frightened. You keep them from being frightened by the experience. Make sure it's fun. Doesn't matter how well they do it. Just take them out and maybe they just pull a block of wood, or maybe they pull you on a bicycle, or if they don't get that right away, you just run ahead and get them pulling some little thing. Just make sure that it's all about play and fun, and so that the pulling will come naturally as soon as they begin to feel it and get in touch with it, because they've so much inside of them that your job is to just, it'd be like taking a child prodigy who was a tremendous, had tremendous musical talent for the piano, and what you have to do is make sure the child enjoyed it. The worst thing you could do would be make them practice too long or be too stern, where soon playing the piano had negative repercussions. If you do that with one of these dogs, you can spoil their heart for doing it. But it's very hard to do, really. I mean, you almost have to do it early on in their career, when they're puppies and they're first being introduced, where the impact is so strong on their brain psychologically that they'd never forget it. They're very forgiving. You know, like when I say if the dog team gets loose, they don't like and catches up, they'll end up in a big ball, and that can be somewhat disconcerting to a dog. But once they're older, they can handle mishaps just fine. You know, you just pet them a little, encourage them, and say, "Oh, it's all right. Here we go. What are you gonna do?" And away you go again. But in those first runs, you just make sure that you put the harness away before the dog wants to be done, and make sure you don't go too far or too fast, and then just repeat it to allow them to grow into, how much fun this is. They love to travel. They love to go down the trail. We'll take little puppies and walk on the trail just to get them used to the idea of exploring and going around corners and seeing what's on the other side, because that's the instinct that you want to nurture. We take care of things in terms of food, in terms of the lodging. We really try to listen to who our client is and what their needs are in order to make sure they have a good time. We don't have a set program where we just sort of fit you in, so you come back and say, "Boy, I didn't like that," or whatever. We want you to have an experience that fits where you are. You know, if you have little children, we don't go as far. If you are a young athletic couple, we'll try to push it a little. And if you're a little bit older and physically don't have quite as much stamina, we don't go as far. We quit a little sooner in the day, you know, and enjoy the sunset.
Didn't that sound marvellous? Well, if the thought of that kind of holiday appeals, and it does to me, you can find out more from Arlie's website, which is www.dogmushing.com. There's a link on our website to his site.
Did you know dogs are not colourblind? They just don't see colours as well as humans do.
And now, 2 Minute Fiction. The Rescue Dog. These days, people often stop me and tell me what a beautiful coat my dog has. But the first time I saw her, it was a different story. She was in a rescue centre near my home. Her coat had become so matted, until by the time she was taken into rescue, most of it had to be clipped off. So she looked skinny, with odd tufts sticking out here and there. As I walked past her pen, we made eye contact, and there was an immediate connection between us. I felt like I'd regained a long-lost friend that I'd never actually met. She wagged her tail, approached me, sniffed my hand, and strained forward to be stroked. She clearly felt just as friendly towards me as I did to her. But what struck me most was her eyes. She was in a sorry state, but she was still gazing out into the world, still looking, searching, hoping that somehow happiness might find her. The rescue workers told me the dog's sad story, and I felt an even stronger sense of empathy with her. You see, I had gotten to a pretty sorry state. I was depressed and in a real mess. It was my habit to wander aimlessly during the day, and one of my usual routes involved visiting the rescue centre. I would walk in front of the dog's pens, greeting the friendly ones, sympathising with the obviously unhappy ones, hoping they would all be found a good home. But until the day I met Jess, I'd never considered homing one of the dogs myself. Suddenly, in that moment, I just knew that Jess had to be mine. I desperately wanted to give her the permanent, comfortable, loving home she deserved. I went home, and I put my house in order. I tidied, cleaned, and dog-proofed, as I knew I would have to pass an inspection in order for Jess to come and live with me. I sorted myself out, too, pulled myself back into the land of the living, made myself presentable so she wouldn't mind being seen with me. I made a life for myself that Jess would fit into happily. And within weeks, Jess was my dog. And I was her person. And now I'm not wandering aimlessly. I'm walking my dog. I don't mind staying in, because it's me and Jess relaxing together. Talking to people isn't a difficulty, because Jess breaks the ice. I've made friends with other dog owners. I actually enjoy life. Jess was a rescue dog. When I saw that despite all the horrible experiences that had befallen her, she still had the light of hope in her eyes, I knew that I could overcome my problems. Now I have someone in my life who makes getting up every morning worthwhile. And do you know something? Whenever I do feel a bit down, I look into her loving, trusting eyes, and she rescues me all over again. That was The Rescue Dog by Julie Hill. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Did you know a dog's heart beats between 70 and 120 times a minute?
Did you know Newfoundlands love the water and are very protective of humans in the water? Well, we went to talk to a group of Newfoundlands and their people who have set up a training club called Paddle Paws to enable owners and dogs to enjoy working in the water together.
We train the Newfoundlands in water rescue, which is basically we're training them to come out to the boat, pull the boat back in. Another element on a different level is they'll jump out of the boat and then pick the rope up and pull it back. They will rescue people from the water, objects from the water. Your dog has to be able to swim safely alongside with you. And we also train them to do karting, which is they have little carts which they pull behind and wear a harness and pull behind. And the general idea is we tried to train them to do what they were originally bred for in Newfoundland, which was to help the fishermen off the boats. They would retrieve nets, repeat people from overboard, and then once they got back to shore, they would put all the catch into the carts and the dogs would then haul it back to the market. So that's the idea behind the training. They're very, very, very powerful. And obviously they've got webbed feet. So, and also when they swim, they don't doggy paddle like normal dogs. They actually do like a breaststroke underwater. They use all 4 feet. If you actually see them in clear water, they swim like otters. They use all 4 feet to swim with, and they turn themselves with all 4 feet as well, just twizzling themselves round. To see them in swimming in clear water is brilliant. Yeah. It's a lot of training. Some of them do it naturally, some of them don't. Some of them hate the water and won't do it at all. So, you know, I've got one there that, like, I don't do water. I'm a show dog, I am. And then I've got one, the big one, he loves it all. Don't necessarily do what you want him to do, but he loves it. And then the other one, he's quite happy to go in and swim in the water, but only wants to do what she wants to do. But the draft, she's a good little draft dog. She's quite happy doing the draft. So that they're all different.
They are actually used in water rescue.
Actually use them for water rescue. And I think it's Italy. They have them jumping out of helicopters into water to rescue people.
You haven't progressed to that yet?
We've not quite got that far. Got the caravans, got the cars to trail them around the country, but we've not got the helicopter yet.
No.
And we're not brave enough to jump out of it anyway.
So it's very much though, it's bringing out sort of natural behaviour.
A lot of it is natural, I mean, a lot of dogs would naturally retrieve somebody in the water by holding onto their arm. But because of the Dangerous Dogs Act and things like that, we have to be careful of what they will and won't do. So we don't actually train them to do that. That's why they all wear a harness. So we train that they go out to somebody, swim round them, and then the person in the water could grab the harness. I mean, it is said that if ever they did have to go out to somebody in the water when they are unconscious, if the person was face down in the water, the dogs will naturally flip them over so that they're right way up, and they will grab hold of them and pull them back. But we've never actually rescued anybody that's unconscious, so and we don't really want to try it.
I mean, we would send them in. I mean, if we were out somewhere and someone was in difficulties in the water, we would go in.
I'm not sure that we would actually send the dog on its own. No. We would probably go in with the dog.
Yeah.
Because then the dog is, if you swam out with your dog to somebody, the dog is more than capable of pulling two people back. Well, sorry, they will pull 14 people back.
Where?
We have actually done that with one of the dogs.
Where?
you get 14 people out in the water, you go right out and you form a line. The dog comes to the person in the front, turns, the person in the front, what you actually do is you put your back to the dog, hold the harness, and then you put a leg out in the water, and then the next person will hoop round that leg. And that person puts their leg up, and the next person hoops round the leg, and you do it all the way along the line, and they pull the lot back.
And obviously you enjoy it. Tell me what the dog's attitude is.
The dogs love it. They just love to be at the water. Whether they do what you actually want them to do, for i.e. test elements or not, is irrelevant, because they just love to be in the water and swim. I mean, they were quite happily going in and out that all day long.
What activities are you actually doing at the moment in the water? The training exercises, what are you actually doing today?
We're doing training, all the training elements for tests, because next weekend we've got tests up at Ellerton. Mainly B's and C tests, which is a B is to swim out to the boat and pull it back, retrieve either a handler or a stranger from the water, retrieve an object thrown out into the water, and an underwater retrieve, which has to be 20 centimetres under the water, and they have to put their head down to get it. And it's a controlled swim of 25 metres alongside the handler.
Right.
And then level C is, again, it's just a progression from that. It's they have to actually jump out of the boat, get the rope and tow it back. They have to retrieve a stranger on level C. It can't be the owner or the handler. They have to retrieve an object that's actually dropped from the boat rather than thrown into the water. And then they have to do a 45 metre controlled swim.
When you say controlled swim, it's saying level with you or what?
Yeah. They have to swim more or less alongside you. They're not allowed to swim more than 6 feet away from you.
So what age would you first try them in the water?
As early as possible can. As soon as they've had their inoculations, and you can bring them out, get them in the water.
Yeah, and just see how they...
Just let them go in and swim, yeah. I mean, most of them swim at probably 11 weeks. Tia swam earlier because she went in our swimming pool.
I like it.
Yeah.
So, hey, no wonder she thinks she's a show dog, you see, though, this swimming pool.
Yeah, it's never, ever too early to start letting them swim and train.
And... I mean, presumably it keeps them in good condition.
It's brilliant. 20 minutes swimming is more beneficial than a two-hour walk.
If you're in the UK and you would like some more information about working your Newfoundland in the water, you can contact Karen or Dean from Paddle Paws on 0116 284 9483. On our website, you can see a video of some of the training that was going on with that group of Newfoundlands on the day we were with them. As you could probably tell, the Newfoundlands were, as I said, eager to be included and be on the radio. But you tried telling a group of dogs where the little one is 126 pounds, that's 9 stone, to be quiet, and you see how much success you have.
Did you know the Labrador is the most popular breed in the world? And now for our younger listeners, it's Puppy Playtime! Today I'm going to review a website I've had a lot of fun on. It's www.loveyourdog.com. There's lots of choices to look at, from fun and games to responsible dog ownership and teaching tricks. You can think about whether you're ready to help care for a dog, learn about dogs and dog breeds, and even print a contract where you promise to meet your dog's needs. There's games like herding sheep, matching the dog pictures, and even quizzes to test your dog knowledge. So if you're allowed on your computer, you've got to check out www.loveyourdog.com. I was given the game Dogopoly for my birthday. It's a dog version of Monopoly, and we've had great fun playing it. Instead of buying roads, you buy dogs of different breeds, which cost more the larger the breed. The deed cards include information about each breed, so you can learn while you play. Instead of houses, you buy dog houses, and instead of hotels, you buy big bones. You have to pay taxes for catching fleas, and the vet has to be paid too. Be careful you're not sent to the kennels, which is like jail, but free barking is quite safe. If you like dogs and enjoy playing games, then try Dogopoly. On our website, there is a link where you can find out more about Dogopoly. Happy playing! Till next time, and remember to have fun with your dogs. Did you know the Faroe Hound is the oldest domesticated dog breed we know of, dating back to before 3000 BC?
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Our training tip this time comes from Mim Edwards, who's a dog trainer in Adelaide, Australia. I had a long chat with Mim, and I have to say, if I lived anywhere near her, I would be beating a path to her door and asking her to help me train my dog. She has a great take on things. She's very positive, and she told me, first of all, a little about her philosophy of dog training.
I am a behavioural trainer, so I've got a certificate for in dog behavioural training. We, all the Delta trainers, all of us that have got certificate four in behavioural training, we all use positive reinforcement. So we try and look for ways to manage the situation and you know, set the dog up to succeed so that we can reward it rather than waiting for the situation to fall apart and set the dog up to fail so that we need to punish it. Nearly everybody now is aware of positive parenting, and nearly everybody is aware that you can't force cetaceans to do their act or exotic animals. They're using positive reinforcement now to get exotic animals to do environmental behaviours like getting their teeth cleaned or their ears checked or whatever it might be. And yet we're still prepared to treat dogs in the most abominable way in the name of training. Dogs are as good as they bite, not because of us.
It sounds great, doesn't it? I asked her for some advice with what I think is a very common problem, which is, how do I stop my dog pulling on the lead?
Okay, well, one of the first things I want you to realise that it's not a matter of stopping your dog from doing something. See, the way I look at it, dogs don't understand the concept of don't pull, don't dig, don't bark, don't chew. So, in fact, it's a lot easier to teach them what you do want them to do. So, for example, if we take something like walking nicely on the lead, it's not a matter of teaching the dog not to pull because it's not a concept the dog understands. Instead, what we need to do is we need to heavily reinforce the dog, in a positive way, obviously, for walking on either one side or the other. Now, traditionally in dog trains, you have the dog on the left-hand side. It doesn't really matter what side you have the dog on, as long as you determine which side the dog is actually walking. One of my pet hates, as I'm sure we've all seen them, is those minesweeper dogs. As people are walking along the footpath, they go from side to side to side. In my estimation, it's the dog that's controlling that walk and not the person. But back to how do we get the dog not to pull. So let's say, for example, we want the dog to walk nicely on the left-hand side. The way I start my classes off is we actually hold the lead in the right hand. Remember, this is with the dog walking on the left-hand side. We have the lead in the right hand, and not holding the handle, holding the lead, say we've got a 3 or 4 foot lead, holding the lead about halfway along, about 2 feet from the dog's collar, so there's a nice loose loop between you and the dog, and we've got our left hand full of really yummy, tiny treats, and the treats that we use have salient for the dog. So we're talking about things like cooked meat, barbecued chicken, bits of cheese, whatever the dog finds reinforcing. Often the dog's normal kibble, dry kibble ration isn't reinforcing enough for the dog, and people attempt to reward their dog with the dog's own food when the dog is out and about and in a very distracting environment. So we go back to our extremely salient, high-value rewards. And we learn to dish them out to the dog piece by piece for very good walking. These are really tiny pieces, because you can imagine that when you're doing the sort of dog training using reward-based training, it's not how big the pieces are that are of relevance to the dog, but it's how often the dog gets the pieces, gets the reinforcement. So we've got the dog on the left-hand side. Hopefully we're both facing in the right direction, in the same direction. And we say to our pup, okay, Fluff, let's go, you know, with me or close, whatever command you want to say. And you step off straight away, and before you've even put your left foot down, you say, oh, good dog, and give the dog a reward. So basically what we're doing is we're rewarding the dog before the dog has had a chance to even hit the end of the lead, before the dog has even realized we're on the move. So we're rewarding the dog for doing the right thing rather than trying to stop the dog from doing the right thing. So you get the dog to follow a food reward, and slowly, even though at first you might reward every single step, it soon generalizes to every second step, every third, every fourth. Pretty soon, if you've got a very hungry dog and really good treat, you should be able to get your dog to walk a good half a dozen to a dozen steps all in one go before you'd need to reward. So once you've got the dog doing that, basically what you need to do is start standing up straight, because we don't want to hunch over, you know, looking like the Hunchback of Notre Dame or anything like that. We start interspersing our straight walking with changes of direction. So if you've got a picture in your mind of what you want the whole thing to look like, which is your dog's right shoulder right up against your left leg, right, if your dog gets more than half a body length in front of you, and you know that in the very next step the dog is going to hit the end of the lead, that is already too late to do anything constructive. So, for example, if your dog is starting to forge a little way ahead and is already more than half a body length in front, what you would do is very quickly do a complete change of direction, do a complete 180, and move in the opposite direction. And as the dog goes to catch up, as soon as the dog hits the right position where the lead is loose and he's on your left leg, you reward again, good dog, and give the treat. So what you're basically doing is you're getting more and more steps for the same small treat and reward. Now, if I could tell anybody anything about getting their dog to stop pulling on lead, it would be this. Do not follow your dog when your dog pulls. Dogs learn from a very early age that in order to get to where they want to go, all they need to do is pull long enough and hard enough, and they'll get to where they want to go. So it, as far as I'm concerned, it starts the instant you put the lead on, ready to go for a walk outside, and your dog is already dragging you to the front door or the side gate. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I would just drop the lead and walk away. The consequence of trying to drag me outside the house to go for a walk is that we actually go nowhere. So I might go in, change my shoes, make a cup of coffee, sit down, read a magazine, whatever. What we're teaching here is we need to teach the dog some self-control. And also that there are consequences to every behavior. So as I said, the consequence of trying to drag me anywhere is that we actually get nowhere. And so in that way, you can also use what we call life rewards. In other words, the thing actually wants walks, getting in or out the house, getting in and out the car, going to the park, whatever it might be. We can use those to reward the dog for walking nicely, even meeting another dog. Would you like to go and say hello to that dog? Okay, we're only doing it if we do it on a loose lead. If you try and drag me over to that other dog, we actually go in the opposite direction. So that's the sort of information I try and tell my students in class. The other thing, I guess, that would be quite important from the very beginning is you need to practice these things in a non-distracting environment. I mean, there is the worst place to try and teach any behavior, really, is in a dog training school, because you've got another half a dozen dogs around you, you've got the instructor yelling at you, you've got strangers alongside. it's a very distracting environment. So you're really better off practicing this at home, where it's nice and quiet, and you might start in your hallway, and then you might go out in your backyard, you might take the show up to the front yard, then you might practice up and down your street, and then you might go to the practice in your dog's local park. So you start the behaviour, and you start rewarding the behaviour at home where there are no distractions, and then what we call take the show on the road, where you slowly up the ante, I guess, and increase the distractions as far as the dog's concerned.
Well, if you got all that, there's no excuse for any of us to be dragged along by our dogs anymore. Mim will be bringing us another tip in the future. If you'd like to check out Mim's website, that's found at www.petdogtraining.com.au. If you have any dog training issues or problems that you would like us to contact one of a team of experts for help with, do get in touch. The addresses will be at the end of the programme.
Did you know a dog's sense of smell is 40,000 times better than ours, and a dog has 40 times the number of brain cells working on sense recognition as we do?
You may remember that last time we told you about the James Well-Beloved Symposium in the UK in Coventry. Well, I attended the symposium and it was a really fascinating day. Hilary Self, the herbalist, and Jimmy Simmons, the acupuncturist, were full of relevant information to our dog's health. I spoke to both of them and they have agreed to come on the programme in the future so that wherever you are, you can enjoy the benefit of their advice as well. Trevor Cooper was really amusing about the issues in law to do with dogs. Wherever you live in the world, it is worth taking an interest in the laws that apply to you and your dog, because you just don't want to find yourself on the wrong side of them. Remember Russ Williams from last time with his kickboxing Black Russian Terrier? Well, watch out for him, because he's going to be on television both in the UK and the US, so keep an eye out for him. You see, where Dogcast Radio leads, others follow close at our heel. Also, are you becoming more aware of the problem of dog crime? I've seen so much about this problem lately, and I've heard about some very, very sad cases. Is your dog microchipped? Is it tattooed? Well, they are issues that we all need to think about. How can we help our dogs stay safe? Jane Hayes from dogloss.co.uk will be talking to us again next time. From now on, we'll be moving to a twice-monthly format, and we'll be aiming to be available on the second and fourth Saturday of every month. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio. If you'd like to contact us wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can contact us by phone from the UK on 0121 288-0922. If you're in the US, you can contact us on our New York number, which is 315-849-2022. From anywhere else in the world, you'll need your international exit code and then 44-121-288-0922. If you have a Skype phone, you can contact us with the ID Dogcast Radio, that's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact us at julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these details can be found on our website, www.dogcastradio.com. And the final word goes to Jenny.
A minister was asked to dinner by one of his church members. He knew she was a bad housekeeper, but agreed. When he sat down at the table, he was surprised how clean everything was. "These plates are spotless," he couldn't help saying. She replied, "They're as clean as soap and water can get them." He blessed the food and started eating. It was really delicious, and he said so. When dinner was over, the hostess took the dishes outside and yelled, "Here, soap! Here, water!"